His Excellency, the President, Jakaya Kikwete. Jennifer Potter. Our moderator, Laura DeAndrea Tyson. Ladies and gentlemen, our working group chair, Gail Smith.
Hello, everybody. Thank you again for joining us. And it's no surprise that this is one of the sessions in which members express the most interest. And I think we've got a great panel for you here today. I want to say a special word of thanks to my friend and our friend, President Kikwete, for being with us. But also a terrific panel that knows quite a lot about public-private partnerships. And I just want to remind you of a couple things as we move forward. You remember that this conversation will move to you after we hear from the panel for a bit and then come back up. While you're listening to the panelists, if you have questions that arise, if you feed them to the person at your table with a computer, they will be processed so that when we bring the panel back, they can address some of those. I'm going to be very brief here and put us in the very effective hands of our moderator, Laura Tyson, well known for her public service, but also, and very importantly, the work she has done and is doing as having been a dean twice at universities where she is helping to grow, support, educate, and send forth the next generation of social entrepreneurs. So, Laura, the floor is yours, and thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be with all of you, and we have a really exciting panel, and we have a very limited amount of time, so I'm going to take virtually no time. Let me say that we have with us, you've, again, to say a bit about each of them, Ian Davis, who has been with McKinsey for 27 years, has served a variety of major leaders all over the world, from companies to heads of state, to NGO leaders, and is very personally committed to the whole question of corporate social responsibility and what the private sector can do to alleviate poverty. So we'll hear from Ian. We also have a very exciting initiative that's been underway for a couple years in the United States. Jennifer Potter directs the Initiative for Global Development. It was formed in 2003. She'll talk about it. It's really a unique organization, bringing together business leaders from major companies from all over the United States to work on really developing, encouraging the U.S. to have the right set of policies to promote economic development around the world. And then finally, we, of course, have the very special pleasure and honor on this panel of having with us the President Kikwete of the United Republic of Tanzania, who has served in the cabinet of that country since 1988 and as Minister of Finance and Minister, I believe, of Energy. He has a large knowledge of how to create public-private partnerships from the public sector perspective. I will only put one sort of a couple of just organizing ideas out there. One is for each of us to think about what precisely can the private sector bring. And there are lots of things the private sector can bring. Ideas, knowledge, leadership, resources are just to name a few. And to think about how different kinds of private sector entities, NGOs, private foundations, multinational enterprises run with bottom lines, entrepreneurs with a triple bottom line or a single bottom line, lots of different private actors, including, by the way, universities, which is what I've been doing. And finally, on the public sector, I just want to put out something fairly controversial for people to think about. There is a view among many business leaders that the public sector is part of the problem, or the public sector isn't doing its job, so the private sector has to go in and fill the void. So that would be the view that there's not much the public sector can bring to the table. On the other hand, if we think about the most successful case of poverty alleviation around the world, it has been in China. It was a public sector, has been a public sector initiative. The private sector has not been, at least the private Chinese sector, not a major actor. Foreign direct investment, yes, a major part of it. So that's just a way of being a little provocative. We agreed beforehand that the order we would go in here is to start with Jennifer Potter talking about her initiative, then go to Ian Davis to talk about some of the issues that he's most thinking about, which are the issues of sustainability, how you take a good idea and make it sustainable, and also how do you govern a public-private partnership, different kinds of actors, different governance structures. And then finally, we'll end with the president of Tanzania telling us, talking to us about his experience in forming successful public-private partnerships for the development of that very important country. So, Jennifer, the key question, I think, to begin with is you've talked about how this organization is unique. What was the niche that you were trying to fill in the creation of this group?
Thank you, Laura. I sat through the last seminar, policy, poverty seminar, and heard jobs, 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 and all I can think of is policy, policy, policy. But as far as we know, the Initiative for Global Development is the only U.S. business-based organization that's very sharply focused on global development and poverty reduction. And it really came about in reaction to what was perceived as a gap between the business voice and the national dialogue on these issues. And I'd love to beg your indulgence and just tell our start story, because I think it illustrates what Judith Roden referred to this morning as how a small group of people who are passionate about what they do can really move the needle. And our start came in Seattle with a small group of business leaders who, post 9/11, who gathered up their peers and said, let's talk about the U.S. role in the world and what business voice should be in shaping that role. And I don't think one person came to that first meeting thinking about global poverty. And the business community, as we all know, the people in this room accepted, of course, think about a lot of things front of mind, but poverty and development usually are not on that list. So when our leaders, who included former Joint Chiefs Chair John Shalley, Kashvili, and former Governor Dan Evans and Bill Gates Sr., when they invite people to a meeting, people tend to show up. And people came there and immediately understood the chain of logic, which is global poverty is a humanitarian issue of immense proportions. It's also an economic issue for our country of very large proportions, because obviously as the world economy goes, so does ours. And then finally, a security issue, and the whole notion that if we're going to build a more stable world order, we must bring opportunity and hope to the half of the world's population that really doesn't have any. The other blinding glimpses that this group fell on were they were stunned by the statistics. They were inspired by the fact that we have the technology, we have the resources, we have the know-how, we know what works, but we lack the political will. And the business voice has simply got to be part of that political will. So with that as a strong start, we got early advice from leaders on both sides of the aisle in Congress and from the administration that we needed to go forth and create a national network of business leaders and not just be from the bluest city in the bluest state, Washington State and Seattle. So we did. And the result today, and I'll fast forward, is we now have over 300 members in 11 cities nationwide that are very focused on bringing the business voice to the poverty agenda. Our Clinton Global Initiative pledge last year was to put business leaders and government leaders together to talk about this, and we had a very successful event in Washington last summer, co-chaired by Colin Powell and Madeleine Albright, and the president also came and talked very specifically about the role of trade policy in poverty elimination, and also the fact that poverty needs to be a keystone of American foreign policy. So just quickly, our current agenda is the policy agenda is aid effectiveness. We have to support things that have clear objectives and measurable outcomes. The Millennium Challenge Corporation is a good idea. It's still in its startup phase, but we think it really deserves a lot of support, not just from the business community, but from everybody. Trade policy goes without saying. Carla Hill stood up at our event last year and said, the biggest thing we could do to help the developing world is get rid of these farm subsidies. And our organization is taking a position on, I think it's going to be a long conversation and a long discussion, but we're trying to find ground with other organizations, both on the left and the right, to do something about trade distorting farm subsidies in particular. And then finally, we have an unprecedented opportunity right now to engage the presidential candidates in a discussion about these issues. And we are going to spend a lot of time and effort working on that in the coming months, and I'd urge everybody in the room to do the same. I think there's no question that presidential leadership can really move the needle on these, and I think we have a great opportunity going forward to bring this agenda in front of them. So maybe I will stop there, Laura, and give somebody else a chance.
Absolutely terrific. Thank you very much, Jennifer. Let me turn to Ian, as I said, next. And I know that when I go to discussions of this in the business community, one of the very first words that does come up is sustainability. There are all these wonderful ideas out there. There are all these organizations. How can we scale them and sustain them?
Thank you, Laura. Well, let me just start off by saying I think that most people recognize that a combination of what's called public and private partnerships is necessary to accelerate the addressing of the poverty issue. I personally like to think there is a tripart relationship. I think in organizational terms, if we distinguish between private, public, and civic, or social as I call it, I think it gives a slightly richer perspective. Public includes government, but also NGOs, and we like to think of it as private, public, and civic or social. So I regard this as a tripartite relationship. I come on to the importance of that, because when we come on to governance issues, public government has a very, very different feel to NGOs, for example. So I think all three actors are crucial if we are to have an accelerated and significant impact on poverty. I absolutely dispute if there is a feeling that the public sector is not important in this. We completely dispute that. Public sector brings clout and it brings legitimacy. Legitimacy is a very, very important word. And if you're tackling poverty at scale, it always gets into policy and political issues, and that's the remit of government, not business, and certainly not of NGOs. So the public sector has, I would argue, the crucial role to play. When it comes to things like infrastructure, large-scale, we all accept it. But I think it's also true when it comes to large-scale supply chain or tackling issues like the bottom of the pyramid. So the public sector, and particularly government, I think is a critical actor, and in my view, has not been talked enough about. The agenda has been hogged, really, by NGOs initially and then the private sector. And I think we have to bring that correction. I'd like to see the public sector and policy much more involved in the debate. So I'd just like to say I regard this as a tripartite relationship. Each can bring slightly different things. Public sector legitimacy. Typically, the private sector, which, as Judith said, is not just business. It can be professions and academics. So private doesn't necessarily equal business. It's a form of ownership. It usually brings primarily capacity and skills, particularly when you're dealing with issues like supply chain, for example, or tackling issues called at the bottom of the pyramid. And the NGOs typically bring skills on the ground and innovation. Our observation is much of the innovation in this thing has come from the NGOs, not from the private sector. We can perhaps debate that. So this combination of innovation, skills on the ground, capacity and legitimacy, in my view, if anything is to happen at scale, requires the involvement of all three sets of actors. Now, if you take that as a starting point, what do we see as some of the issues for really making a significant dent on this huge issue of poverty, which is an economic issue, and in my view, it's a moral and a social issue as well. Laura talked about sustainability. In fact, I wanted to emphasize the key challenge, at least as I see it, is one of scalability. Scalability. I am stunned by the fantastic things that are going on across the world in countries. Everybody in this room has got a great story. And my point is, you hear all these great stories, but in the end, you have to still say, so what, when it comes to poverty alleviation? I'm being a bit provocative now. The really big story, which does not involve this thing, is in China, where the government has really pushed getting hundreds of millions out. And so the question we have to learn is, how can we scale up these tremendous initiatives that are going on all across the world in so many different areas of poverty? So I think the models, can we do it? I think we've demonstrated that we can. But the question is, how can we do it at scale and how can we do it faster? And I think urgency is an important factor to it. It seems to me that there are two issues which I'd like to put in front of the group that we should talk about scale. The first is one of incentives. Incentives. With the possible exception of the public sector, the organizations involved don't often have the incentive to replicate or scale the initiative they're doing. Many private sector companies are trying to do something in a country because the manager feels passionately about it or it's part of the strategy. They're not necessarily doing it on a global scale. And the NGOs typically have a country-specific or a particular theme, and they don't have any aspiration to scale, particularly if it goes outside their bailiwick. And there's a lot of rivalry between NGOs, which sometimes prevents scaling. So I think the issue of how you get an alignment of incentives and ambition around scale is crucial. Otherwise, we'll get lots and lots of people doing lots and lots of great things, but there'll be lots and lots of great little things. And so my plea is, how do we get this idea of replication, scalability, which is fundamentally a public sector and a business concept, so that we can roll it out? And those of you that are in big business will know that a lot of big business is really just scaling out small business ideas. And so I think some of the thinking between big business and small business is important. And then for that reason, I would downplay the use of the word entrepreneur. I think we need people who can go scale and go big. And these are not very glamorous topics. People don't like big things and they scale things. But quite frankly, I think that's more important than just the entrepreneurial phrase. We've got enough entrepreneurial ideas out there, I would argue. The question is, how do we scale and how do we learn the lessons of big business and big government whilst avoiding the pitfalls, not least public relations pitfalls, of big business and big government? So that's issue number one. Issue number two, which I'll leave with you, is one of governance. Now, normally, most of us, when we hear the word governance, our eyes roll and we want to fall asleep. We think of Sarbanes-Oxley and rules around boards and all that. And that is true. On the other hand, from observation, when any of these joint partnerships get to any level of scale, they come under tremendous governance stresses. Many of you in this room will know it. Usually partnerships come together for pragmatic reasons. This is true in the private sector, by the way, as well. And anyone in the private sector knows that the most complicated form of organization device is a merger or alliance. They are inherently complicated. But when things get large, and when they're successful or when they fail, and these are the tipping points, big success or big failure, then the strains about lack of shared alignment on objectives, lack of shared purpose, lack of shared rules on how to deal with disputes become very, very major. And I believe that a governance construct for partnerships, private, public, and social, is going to need to be developed. Private governance doesn't work. A, because most private governance are country-specific, and usually the organizations are operating in another country. And secondly, the governance construct between public and private, and frankly, most NGOs don't have much governance structure of any description, it really doesn't work. So my view is that there does need to be a new governance model that deals with the problems of replication of success, or dealing, and this is a primary role of governance, of dealing with failure, which inevitably is going to happen. So the two challenges that I see around an objective of how do we scale up success rather than focus on lots of entrepreneurism is one around governance and the second is around incentives. And perhaps we can have some debate around that.
Well, those are some very big questions. And I think your organization, Jennifer, is a little bit about scaling up because you're trying to bring in a very large number of very big companies, all of whom would work together to have a real effect on policy. So let me turn to our president and ask him to talk about his own experience here in terms of public-private partnerships and what is most important to your country and what can the private sector or the public and civic and private sector, I like Ian's tripartite, what's the most important things for us to be doing?
Well, I don't know where to start. Well, but for sure what I can say is public-private partnership is desirable. And as you rightly said, it is government, it is business, and the civil society. It is desirable because, for reasons of complementarity, in terms of scaling up public service delivery, in that sense. Because you pull together resources. The government has some resources. The private sector, meaning business, have some resources. But NGOs also have some resources. But also pulling together competencies. Government has some, the private sector has some. And when this combination is attained, then definitely the possibility of scaling up public service delivery is feasible. the public, or the government and the private sector, there are times that the goals of entrepreneur, goals of government policy, tends overlap or converge. But there are some areas where they overlap and converge. So it's always good to develop this partnership, as I said, so that you don't duplicate things. But also through pooling of the competencies, you'd be able to do things much better than otherwise everyone doing it alone. So there are areas, for example, where we have been trying in Tanzania to develop this kind of partnership, and we have made some achievements and some successes. For example, in the public health care services, take for example the fight against malaria. Government wants to scale up, but you need mosquito nets, insecticide treated mosquito nets. You need medicines. When you have this partnership, or if a partnership is developed between the public, the private sector, meaning the business, and the NGOs, you'd be able to deliver on this. Or five, for example, practical example is, as again back to the fight against malaria. You need medicines. And here comes President Clinton. He says he's going to talk to the producers so that medicines can be available to the poor at lower prices. And then you have Sumitomo Chemicals producing insecticide-treated mosquito nets. Here comes Flamboyant Bono saying, I'm going to subsidize the prices of mosquito nets so that they can be available to the poor at affordable prices. So this kind of a combination where the government and the civil society, CGI is an NGO. Okay. Yeah. Working together with business, you make available insecticide-treated mosquito nets. You make available medicines at low cost. You'll be able to deal with malaria. So these are some of those practical examples. The fight against HIV/AIDS. Okay, the government wants the people, those who are infected, to get ARVs. Okay, ARVs are expensive. The government from a poor country like Tanzanian government cannot afford this. If the government cannot afford to bring those drugs, the poor people who are suffering cannot even afford them, much more. So what do we do? Then again, President Clinton comes, talks to the producers. At least they waive issues of intellectual property rights. They allow generic drugs to be produced in India or elsewhere. Then they are available, and people can access this. These are things that are these are practical examples of the benefits that you see. But then there is a problem of getting the health personnel to help the people, teach the people how to use the drugs, Then you have the Clinton fellows out there working with the people on the ground, working with the patients. So this is a kind of a model of public-private, or public-private and civic partnership. That is actually working on the ground and delivering. But also, let's also take care of some of those practical issues of poverty alleviation in terms of poverty alleviation, there is the aspect of provision of basic social and economic services adequately. Things like health services, roads, energy, water. But also there is the question of increasing people's incomes. Public-private partnership works as well. The last CGI, Jonathan Oppenheimer, can you stand up, please? Jonathan Oppenheimer of the Beers. And user. And me, of course, yeah. Together with me. We formed a partnership. President Clinton facilitated that partnership. The Beers contributed $2 million to assist artisanal miners, artisanal diamond miners, do the mining, increase productivity. I said increase productivity because they are using archaic instruments, really, in the process. Archaic equipment in the process. Productivity is very low. So many risks. But through this public-private partnership, the program which Jonathan and I, about a month ago, inaugurated it. You can see the artisanal miners now they see hope. They have better instruments. They get better training. They have better knowledge. Definitely they get more diamonds. Well, of course, but De Beers was there also. They said, if you get the diamonds, the market is there. So the whole chain has been completed. But otherwise, these are people who have been scratching the surface, scratching the soil, under very difficult circumstances, under very difficult conditions, and earning very little. Public-private partnership has delivered on this promise. This morning I was talking to Starbucks. We are talking of a program that Starbucks is also involved, but TechnoServe is involved, training coffee farmers, extending credit to them. They are now producing high quality coffee. And the CEO of Starbucks was telling me this morning, the Tanzanian coffee by these farmers is incomparable in terms of quality. But here are the same farmers who have been toiling year in, year out, earning little, but through this public-private partnership, they've now been able to increase productivity. Not only productivity, but also the quality of the coffee that they are producing, and that coffee earns premium price. So we are now able to deal with problems of elevation of poverty through this kind of partnership. So I'm saying it's desirable, it's feasible. What requires is the coordination so that you can develop the partnerships. Of course, dialogue. I usually do a lot of dialogue with the private sector. We have it's created what we call the Tanzania National Business Council, where the president meets the businesses. We sit down and discuss a wide range. There are issues of concern. But also we discuss the whole question of corporate social responsibility, that you are at a place, you can contribute to create improvement of the surroundings, improvement of the lives of the people, become more friendly, and you create a win-win situation so that they see you benefiting, but they also see themselves also benefiting through that kind of process. So I'm saying, as far as we are concerned, we are quite happy. It is something practical. It is working. It has been working in Tanzania. It can work everywhere, I believe.
Those are excellent examples. Thank you very much. I believe we might have Jim. Do we have the CEO of Starbucks? There he is. And he was supposed to be on our panel, but was moved to another. But I think we got a pretty good idea of what of the Starbucks approach from the president. we will go to the tables. I will just raise a thought basically on the examples that we've heard here, and that is the thought of scalability. In the case of Starbucks, my understanding is their model they use around the world, and so they're scaling it themselves in a sense. They've designed a system. They go throughout the world, and they use the system. In the case of what you talked about in the public health sector, making that scalable is really a question of drug delivery, of getting enough of the medicine and then getting it out. And so one of the things to think about is how to make it scalable. But I think we should turn it over to the tables for a while with those kinds of questions in mind, and then we'll come back and get your input and questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And Laura, I think you brought it to the right place. Our two questions for the discussion are essentially very simple, but again, we're applying them to what we've heard. And the first is about what governments, business, and the civil society can do to create more partnerships and create the conditions where more can be created. I think, as Ian pointed out, we've got lots of examples of good ones, and we've seen, Mr. President, from your examples, that they are happening. But what can these three groups do to create more and to bring what's working to scale? Again, if we're going to talk about public services, for example, it's great if you can cover a sub-region, but if you can cover the entire country, it's a whole lot better. The second is on the individual level. What can we do, coming from our different perspectives as CGI members, as businesses, NGOs, as civil society? And I want to just share with you something that came up in year one and in year two, which was a desire people had to figure out how to build networks and platforms so that businesses and NGOs, and I think very importantly governments, that want to work together can connect. How can that happen? How can we get the word out there? How can we do the connecting and networking that will allow these partnerships to flourish? So we're going to push it all to you. Arturo will announce when your time is running short, and then we'll bring the discussion back up to the panel. So please go ahead, and the floor now belongs to you.